I'd like to move on and introduce Inder Verma, my friend and colleague, and you can see we're all very familiar with each other here, but he's an exemplary professor, but also an exemplary colleague, because he really helps us to collaborate and has taken time, quite a few times, to try and see how we can work together from disparate disciplines to move stem cell biology forward. So he always has very interesting ideas. We'll talk about reprogramming today. Thank you very much, Inder, for being here.
Thank you, Katharina. Yes. So, it's nice to be in our own institution. I just realized that I come on this podium and introduce speaker after speaker, and I never get to talk. Today is my chance, and I'm going to go for a long, long time just to cover it. So it's, again, as Katharina said, you start out with something, and it ends up being something quite different. We started it many years ago with the idea of making mouse models which perhaps more faithfully phenocopy that of the human. Now, we have learned a lot about mouse models, xenografts being a wonderful situation where lots of drugs have been discovered, but they are not ideal way of doing it because you're putting million cells in the brain or on the liver or in the blood of a mouse, which is a nude mouse that doesn't have an immune system, and that's not how tumor starts. Tumors start with a single cell with one mutation, second, third, and so on. The other model systems are transgenics or knockouts, where you either turn the gene on in every cell in that organ, for example, a mutated RAS, or you have knocked out the p53, for example, in every cell in that tissue. So tumors don't start where every cell in that tissue has a mutation. It's usually one cell, and that recruits the other cells around it. So many years ago, postdoctoral fellows in the lab decided to figure out how we could use our viral vector systems to introduce a gene ideally in a single cell, then a second gene and a third gene, with the hope of now making a tumor which will be much more phenocopy of the human GBMs or human tumor that we're going to work on, and that might give us some more clues to it. So we started out with GBMs. And the reason for starting out with the glioblastomas was partly for the fact that it is a terrible disease. Of course, that's, everyone knows, hardly any really change in its recovery time. And second, that it was actually localized in the brain, so we didn't have to worry about metastasis. And third, with our long-term collaboration with Rusty Gage's lab, we had learned how to stereotactically introduce genes specifically in specific regions and specific cells in the brain. So with that in mind then, three postdoctoral fellows, Tomo, who really started the project, made a lentiviral vector such that when introduced into a cell, it was only expressed in the cell, very specific cell. In other words, the cell in which the virus was introduced was the only place where the gene could be excised and gene could be expressed. The work is then followed on by Gino, who is in the audience probably, and Yashushi, whose work I will mention that. So with that in our mind, we began to ask the question, can we make a mouse model where we introduce the gene in few cells? So in the very first set of experiments, we used RAS as a surrogate for EGF receptor activation and P53 mutation, which is very common. In fact, 80% of all human GBMs have a mutation in EGF receptor and P53 or some sort of combination of that. And what we were able to do was, we didn't succeed in one. We have gone down to now 20 cells, but in the brain, as you have heard many times, there are billions and trillions of cells. We were able to introduce the gene either in the cortex, maybe 50 cells, or in the hippocampus, maybe 50, 60 cells, or in the subventricular zone. Since the vector was also marked with GFP, you could actually count the number of cells which are positive. Now, you could argue formally that maybe the virus went here also. We just don't know it. It's possible, but we can't rule that out. So within the context of what we can say, that these are the number of cells in the whole brain in which we were able to introduce the gene and express selectively in that tissue, largely because they have a Cre and so on and so forth. With that in mind, then we were able to make tumors. This is one example of Dino's work, where she used RAS. And instead of using P53 heterozygotes, which would have been, it's another long, takes much longer, she made an siRNA to P53. So the vector has both RAS activation and siRNA to P53 introduced just in the few specific cells in that cell type in the brain, be it be a glial cell, be it be a neuronal cell for that reason. And what she can see, very couple of months later, the tumors are formed, the tumors have all the hallmarks of what a typical glioblastoma in the human has been shown to be. They have high cellular density, nuclear pleomorphism, They have hemorrhage and vascularity. I'll come back to that in a moment. They have perivascular infiltration, pseudopalisading, which is kind of making fences, and they're highly infiltrative in their characteristics, and that's known because GBMs grow so very rapidly that within a few months, the whole area is completely covered. So we knew how to make a model. We have made this model system, and we can also make the different sets of genes. The first interesting thing was that even though we started in the glial cells, the gene was actually introduced specifically in a GFAP-positive cell, but the tumors actually have all the lineages, which is also, again, a common hallmark of GBM. The tumors are, of course, we started with RAS. In this case, we have AKT, a different kind of a tumor. They're positive for a neuronal marker, the precursor marker that you heard many times today, Nestin. They're positive for glial cell because we started with them, but they're also not positive for neuronal and oligodendrocytes. So a hallmark of GBM is that it contains all different lineages, even though we started with one, but all the lineages are formed, which is what we think will be more like a phenotype of a human GBM. Now, we introduced the gene first in the hippocampus in the glial cell, but if you do the same experiment in the subventricular zone, you can also make tumors. These are GFP positive. Or the work has been done by Dino that whether you can also introduce them into a Nestin Cre mouse in the hippocampus, you also make tumors. So, in fact, we have been able to introduce the variety of different genes in a variety of different places and make tumors. We can almost always predict now, in this case, that the tumors will originate. For example, we know whether you put in the hippocampus or cortex or subventricular zone with different genotype backgrounds, we always get tumors. So first thing, we can make tumors in a variety of different genes. But a more important question is, a big question that is at least I didn't know too much about it, was always asked to us, what is the cell of origin for GBM? And we don't think that's an important question at all, because we think that the cell is not the issue, it's the genetic makeup is the issue. For example, we can introduce the gene in glial cells, we can make the tumor, whether it's in the hippocampus or the cortex or the subventricular zone. Or if you have a Nestin Cre, you can make tumors. Of course, you make lesser number of tumors in cortex because the Nestin positive cells are far fewer there as compared to glial cells. If I'm saying anything wrong in this, it's Rusty's responsibility because he is my local guide to tell me these things. If you take a SOX2 Cre, which is also a neural marker, this is again, we are positive for hippocampus. We haven't done them in the cortex being done. And also one SYN1 Cre mice. So we haven't done the oligodendrocyte. We're just waiting for the right mice. So we believe that it is not necessarily important to know where is the cell of origin. It's really the makeup of the genes. We think any place in the brain, by and large, any place, as we have tried, you can actually make the glioblastoma. So that's the first interesting lesson we learned. The second lesson we learned from this was that if you now take just 10 cells, we have done 100 cells, 10 cells, now put it back into a nude mouse. Now we have to do nude mouse because we completely don't have a full genetic background cleaned up as yet. So if we now take these tumors, make a cell line, take 10 cells, put it back into a mouse, we again make GBMs. So that tells you that every cell has the potential, if you want to call it a cancer stem cell or a cancer initiating cell, that every cell has the ability to make a tumor again. And that tells you the problem with glioblastomas, that even if the surgeon have removed 99.999% of the tumor, the remaining few have the full capacity to become a tumor just as aggressively, just as rapidly as we show over here. Now, do they have properties of replicating themselves? Do they have the properties of a stem cell? The answer is yes. They can grow as a neurosphere, perfectly fine. More importantly, they can also differentiate now. So the property of a cancer-initiating cell will be not only to replicate itself, but also to differentiate to all lineages. Here they can differentiate. In fact, we can show you, I don't have here the oligodendrocyte, but they can go on to become glial cells, and they can go on to become neuronal cells. So not only these cells have acquired the property to make the tumors, but they can actually now become the stem cells, so they can make new tumors, and they can differentiate all the lineages. Now, having the knowledge that we knew that we can always make the tumors, we wanted to know, can we actually, and in fact, this is what we should talk to Tanishtha one day, can you actually look and see how the tumors develop every day, essentially, because we know how the tumors, that we always will get tumor when we introduce in a specific regions of the brain with specific sets of genes. So work done in collaboration with people in Mark Ellisman's lab. So here's a direct injection into the hippocampus in a GFAP Cre mouse. And 2 weeks, so you can already see 2 weeks later, you see the GFP positive cells in the section reconstructed. And if you now look at them, the tumor development, so 2 weeks, 5 weeks, 8 weeks, we start out with glial cells, GFP positive. They're positive for GFAP, and you see the superimposition of the two. But by 8 weeks period of time, already the cells begin to become nestin positive. So we started with glial cells. The cells have now begun to become nestin positive, which is the hallmark of a neuroprogenitor cells. So already there is something has happened, some reprogramming has happened, where a glial cell has now reprogrammed itself into a neuronal precursor cell, and thereby it has now the advantage to grow multiply as a neurosphere, but also can differentiate to all the lineages. Of course, the question we have to prove is that whether the cell where we introduced the gene was actually a nestin positive, glial positive cell, so we want to absolutely make sure that it is nestin negative. So again, taking Mrallan neuronal stems from Rusty's lab, what Dino did was to then remove using Lenti-Cree and make sure that there's no nestin, that they're strictly glial cell positive, S100 beta, as you saw many times today, GFAP positive, here's the superimposition. So as far as we know, they're negative for nestin, they're positive for GFA. When we use them to now make tumors, once again, the tumors are again nestin positive. So we think this is really what we have called is really what reprogramming is. What is reprogramming? We have heard many times. You take a normal cell, you add to it these four genes, MYC, KLF, OX4, SOX2, and you have to remove P53 to increase the frequency. That's a fibroblast or for that reason a keratinocyte or a liver cell or a blood cell. What we have done is we have taken a glial cell, introduced into RAS or AKT different sets of genes, knocked out the P53, and in fact this malignant glioma is now SOX2 positive, NANOC positive, and c-MYC positive, which is exactly the property of an iPS cell, except this being localized in the brain has gone on to become a neural stem cell and therefore give to all the different lineages. I am almost certain, and we are doing the experiment, that if we were to do the same experiment, same genes, in a glial cell in vitro, this will all go on to also reprogram itself into a iPS cell that will give link to all the lineages and not restricted here. The reason it's restricted here because it's in the brain, not in a test tube here or in a petri dish. So I think it's an important lesson for us here again. What we started out making mouse models, we now think, A, the cell is not important, but more importantly, what we think is happening is any cell where the genes are introduced which have the appropriate ability to reprogram it, they go on to become neuroprogenitor cells, which then have the ability to go on to make the tumors, and therefore every cell has now acquired the ability to become a cancer cell. While we are doing this, we begin to also ask another question. And that's the question which Yashushi asked. Brain is highly vascularized, and GBMs are highly vascularized. In fact, Avastin is being used as a treatment because the GBMs have the blood-brain barrier broken. But unfortunately, it only works for a while and then it stops. So Yashushi then uncovered another very interesting aspect from these models. What he saw was that if he now looks at the blood vessels, remember, the tumors are green, they're GFP positive. What he notices is that there is a blood vessel which is GFP positive. It is positive for von Willebrand fractal, which is a marker for endothelial cells. And you can see here, at least those in the front, that the red and the green never really overlap each other. However, if he looks into the deep part of the brain, 30% of the cells, over 30 to sometimes even larger, where you have the GFP positive, we have von Willebrand fractal positive, and in fact, they're now superimposed completely. Now, the only way the green cells could contribute towards making a blood vessel is if they came from the tumors, because the tumors are the only which are GFP positive. And you can actually see that these are, they have the mosaicism, they have a mixture of both GFP positive and that of the von Willebrand fractal, and therefore you see the superimposition of the two. I'll cut short a long story, lots of data. But now, we also said, well, the easiest way to do the experiment is to directly ask the question, what happens into human tumors? So here, Yashushi got directly samples from brain tumor from a patient from Japan, and those patients have so this is a normal brain, you have the EGF receptors, which are relatively few. They are von Willebrand fractal, which is green shown over here. But if he now takes the surgical sample from the patient, they're positive for von Willebrand fractal, They are positive for EGF receptor because these patients have EGF receptor mutation, and here you can see the superimposition of von Willebrand-Frankter and EGF together. So the only way these blood vessels, which are von Willebrand-Frankter positive and also CD144 positive, would have come is if they actually transdifferentiated from a tumor cell into endothelial cells. And in fact, there are two papers that just came out last week in Nature, unfortunately for us, that they came up, but at least nice part of it is that they also exactly the same set of results, that they have taken patient samples as well as mouse as those tumors, and they transdifferentiate into endothelial cells, which of course has great implications. The first implication of that is that, oh, this is just to show that this is in the hypoxic domain. The first implication of this is that if you now treat the patient with VEGF inhibitors, for example, in this case, our patient being the mouse in this case, that if you treat them with one with the inhibitors for VEGF or Avastin, which will be in the case of human, in the case of the mouse, we just have an inhibitor molecule of a VEGF inhibitor. You see whether you add the inhibitor or you don't have the treatment, there is essentially no cell survival. And we believe that happens because the tumor cells are now transdifferentiating to made blood vessels, and therefore they're not going through the angiogenic process. Therefore, addition of inhibitors of VEGF will have no effect or impact on them because they basically are making blood vessels through transdifferentiation. So if that were the case, you should be able to increase the number of transdifferentiated cells in the mice which are treated with VEGF. And the answer is yes. If you now take the mice with the tumors, treat them with the vehicle or treat them with the control, you see very few transdifferentiated cells. But if you now treat them with the VEGF inhibitor, while you have killed the angiogenesis, but of course you have increased the amount of the transdifferentiated endothelial cells, which means they perfectly carry the blood, they perfectly carry the food, and therefore the cells will perfectly grow and Avastin will have no effect. And the obvious implication is then if you want to treat GBMs based upon these kind of data, one might want to combine inhibitors that prevent the transdifferentiation as well as that of the Avastin together, and therefore the tumor will now be presumably much more controlled and effective, this treatment. So let me now say one additional thing to it. So here is an interesting fact. Here is Rusty, as I said, Rusty and I sort of share our lab. 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, Rusty's lab published the following. They showed that cell fusion independent differentiation of neural stem cells to endothelial lineage. Well, what have we done? Precisely that. We have taken a human, we have taken a neuronal cell or a glial cell, introduced 4 genes, which then caused it to reprogram to become a stem cell, and that stem cell has now earned the ability to transdifferentiate into an endothelial cell, which is precisely what a normal neural stem cell has the ability to do that. So you could formally say we haven't done transdifferentiation, we have merely repeated what a human neural cell, stem cell's definition should be to go on to make endothelial cell. But it is comforting to know for us that the mechanism that we are proposing, that the cells go on to reprogram to become stem cell, is perhaps in the right direction, because after they have done so, like that of case of the mouse, they have actually now transdifferentiated some of them, at least to endothelial cells. So I think that's nice to know. That's a good verification, although we have to formally now prove that the human nestin-positive stem cell in vitro can also transdifferentiate to endothelial cell in just a matter of time. Finally, let me summarize what I said today. We started out making lentiviral vectors to generate mouse models, which we have now done in many cases for prostate, for GBM, for pancreatic, and we are doing also for the lung cancer. We think GBMs originate via reprogramming of differentiated cells, whether it's a neural cell, whether it's a glial cell. We haven't done as yet the oligodendrocyte. We think glial neuron neuroprogenitor cells in various parts of the brain can give rise to GBM, so the cell of origin perhaps is not as important, it's rather the sets of genes. Both mouse and human GBMs can transdifferentiate into blood vessels, usually in the deep part of the brain. Data I haven't shown, but that, just take my word. And finally, as I said, we are using this method to make many tumors. So what we started out making viral vectors for gene therapy, they went on to become for us a way to make mouse models. from which we have gone on to learn a little bit more about the disease, in this case GBM, and might be actually able to contribute something towards perhaps a therapeutic revenue, again, coming from this direction to understand from the mouse model into the human. With that, thank you very much for your attention, and welcome to the Salk Institute. This is, by the way, is not a photo image. It is exactly how the colors look like in the evening. Yeah, spectacular it was.
Okay, we'll take one question.
About your last set of data. Do you know how many of the vessels that are, you know, transdifferentiated EC lined are perfused? And to what extent have you characterized them? That is, you know, what is their expression repertoire like after they've differentiated?
And you mean in vitro?
Either.
Because we can do it in vitro, yes. The in vitro, we can take these cells, we can transdifferentiate them, we can add to them VEGF inhibitors, nothing happens to them. And this requires hypoxic conditions. So if you don't have hypoxia, normoxia, you do not have them. Only in the hypoxic condition do you transdifferentiate them. We have done that.
I'll take half a question.
A quick question. How close are you to reprogramming your tumor cells to become normal? Because obviously you have programs to make them pathogenic. So I think from what I'm hearing you say, that you also have programs using a viral vector that can reprogram them to be normal. And how close are you to that, doing that work?
Perhaps I misspoke that if I said that. I don't think I ever said I had a vector which can reverse it. But we could theoretically do that experiment, at least in vitro we can. Just take in this case, as you may have seen again, a couple of papers in Nature, put P53 back in it later in the stage, the tumors reverse. We haven't done that because you will have to imagine that every cell in the tumor have to have a reversal, because if it is not a reversal, then that single cell will come back and make the tumor. So this is an old idea of able to reverse them, but you got to get in every cell. And we don't have a system as yet to do that.